Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international location and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the cuisine and culture of a place. This week, I am happy to welcome Tequila Hierro, Herman Gonzalez, founder and owner of both T1 Tequila and Tears of Llorona. And we will talk more about those products in the second half of the show. But hello, Herman. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Great to be here. Thank you for joining me. I'm so excited to have you. And I know we timed your interview perfectly because we are coming up on Cinco de Mayo, one of my favorite holidays. But I want to start the show by asking you to share with us, maybe you can give us a little bit more background on Cinco de Mayo, because I think here in the U.S. we celebrate it a little differently than its original purpose. And also explain to us your family connection in the history of that holiday.
Okay, yes, you know, in Mexico, the Cinco de Mayo war was, it's a very glorious day for Mexico because we defeated what it, at that time, was one of the most experimented armies in the world. But as you say, you know, it's a celebration that is more local than a federal celebration for Mexico. And, you know, it's great that in U.S. they celebrate it so much because it's another way to see history from another eye of different countries.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm correct, your great-grandfather was the president of Mexico at the time?
Well, not at that time. At that time, the general was General Ignacio Zaragoza. But there were also other generals. It was General Porfirio Diaz and my great-grandfather, General Manuel Gonzalez, who later became president of Mexico.
And when he was president, was he responsible for helping to lobby for the creation of the holiday?
Well, in personal, for my father, this date was very important because, you know, the army was on one side and what we call the Chinacos, which were the first Mexican warriors after the independence of Mexico, and was why he get the name Chinaco for his first tequila, because at the end it was a small army defeating a big army. So that was why it was very important for it.
I see. And so that was your great-grandfather, but then your father, was he the first one to enter into the tequila business? Can you tell me a little bit about how your family got involved in that production?
Well, this is, you know, my father used to work at the Mexican government. He created what is the Mexican insurance for the cavalry and agriculture. And many years later, in 1966, a hurricane called Inés came into the south part of Tamaulipas, where, you know, and he, as a chief of the insurance, he flew all over and checked the devastation made by the hurricane. And he saw some Sylvester agaves in the area, and he decided it was a good time to get, you know, new plantations. And one of his ideas was to bring the blue agave, the one that we need to make tequila. And sorry. And what he did, he planted these agaves in his ranches and in the south part of Mexico, central south part of Tamaulipas. And what he did, after 7 years, he wanted to harvest the agaves and sell them to the tequila industry in Jalisco. That was impossible because the tequila industry wanted to pay half of the price for the Tamaulipas agave. At that time, they made what it's called the Mexican norm for the tequila. And it didn't, you know, it's like champagne that has controlled areas. And for the tequila, it was only the state of Jalisco, some municipalities of Michoacán, Nayarit, and Guanajuato, neighbor municipalities. And this is on the central west part of Mexico. My father's ranch was in the central east part of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to fight all these 36 tequila industry to get the name and the permission to produce tequila in that other area. So it took him only 4 years, you know, working and, you know, to get the name, to get the approval to produce tequila in the southern part, southern central part of Tamaulipas.
And are you, and that was when he was making Chinaco, correct?
Yes, it was in 19, you know, the norm became official in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
Until October 1977, he got the approval to include these municipalities.
And you're still making tequila there today?
My family is. It's a great tequila. The interesting thing about Chinaco, the Chinaco was, you know, it was a little warrior that bought all the tequila industry. And it was very interesting because my father started exporting in 1983 and created the super premium category in tequila.
Uh-huh. And tell me a little bit about how tequila and the production of tequila and the flavors, how does all of that help to tell the story of Mexico and the land of Mexico?
Well, I think tequila has been in all the history of Mexico with tequila taxes. The tequila that was exported to California in the 1850s, you know, when the gold fever was there, Guadalajara, Jalisco exported a lot of tequila there. So all the taxes help a lot the city of Guadalajara.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I say, if you want to become a tequilero, the first thing that you have to have is a lot of patience, because it only takes 8 years for agave to get to the right maturity. And it depends on the different areas or levels. It can go from 7 to 12 years to get the maturity.
And there's so many different types of agave, correct?
Well, in Mexico, we have like 150 varieties of agave.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be tequila, to be able to make tequila, it has to be the blue agave Weber variety. Agave Weber blue variety.
Okay, got it.
Sorry.
And no, it's fine. And so that all brings us up to now Cinco de Mayo and having, you know, we like to celebrate with margaritas and, you know, all kinds of Mexican fare. So how do you feel about that, that the U.S. has kind of taken its and made this holiday its own?
You know, I think it's great. And we all know the number one cocktail in the United States is margarita.
And how do you make the perfect margarita?
Well, you know, I'm Mexican. I'm not very used to cocktails, but, you know, I don't like to mix alcohols that comes from different sugars. That's why I make my tequila margarita only with Tijuana Blanco or Reposado, ice, you know, the big limes.
Mm-hmm.
And agave nectar.
And that's it. Nice and simple.
Yes. And, you know, it, all the sugar comes from the same source. And that will really help you to have a next much better day.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's take a quick break because when we come back, I want to talk more about your tequila specifically and some other future projects you have coming up.
Thank you.
Listening to Quick by Dreams. This is Native on heritageradionetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the heritageradionetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you're listening to Native on Heritage Radio. And today I'm talking to Herman Gonzalez about his family history, Mexican culture, and tequila. So let's jump into the products, Herman, that you are responsible for. You have two tequila brands, but I want to start with Tears of Llorona. Am I saying that right? You can correct
yes.
me. Okay.
It's only the tears of the Llorona what can make these flavors come alive, you know? It's a, the Llorona is a very old legend that, you know, it's, there's different versions depending on which part of Mexico you are. Mm-hmm. But the one that I like is the one that talks about the very beautiful Aztec princess that got in love with a conquistador and they got some kids. But the conquistador just was conquistador all over, you know, ladies, land, everything. So he went out of the house and, you know, this lady became a little crazy. She lost the babies and, well. But the thing is, when I was young, in Mexico, most of the parents, if you're not behaving very well, they will tell you. If you don't behave, the Llorona will come and pick you up. That's the legend.
And you decided to name your brand after that legend?
Yes, because, you know, we were in a boat, some friends of mine that believe that in tequila as much as I do, and they believe that tequila can be in a higher level. And all the music that they were playing at that time, it was in Spanish, so the Llorona song came out. And I told my friends the legend, and they love it. So that's why we got the name, the Tears of the Llorona.
And so tell me a little bit more about the product.
Well, this product is different from what I learned from my father, because I did a little different distillation. I did everything myself, from cooking everything. And it was a small load. And contrary from what I know to age in all Scotch whiskey barrels, I did sampled some other, I did the aging in some other barrels, mm-hmm. used barrels. Like I have cognac, brandies, port, and there's like 12 varieties. In order to make the Tears of Llorona first and second load, I use a little bit of Scotch whiskey barrels because I love the dryness that comes from those barrels. Mm-hmm. I use some sherry barrels because I like to have the fruitness. And I add brandy barrels to get the sweetness. So it really makes a very complex product that has all the, it's like layers of flavors, but it doesn't lose the, you know, the marmalade of the greens that remembers you that is tequila.
And it's extra añejo. How many years is it aged?
This has been aged for 5 years.
5 years, okay. And I know that it's a very small production. I know Food & Wine magazine called it the Pappy Van Winkle of tequilas. So tell me a little bit about what happened. You released a little bit and it was well received, or?
Yes, you know, it's a, for me, well, it's a great honor to be compared with Pappy. And the thing is, yes, we didn't know what was going to happen, so we released a little bit in San Francisco, which it's a city that is hungry for high-end products, especially tequilas. San Antonio, because that's San Antonio, Texas, that's where I live. And we experimented in Charleston, who we know is not a tequila city.
But you're trying to help change that, right?
I hope we can change that. And the goal of this product is to, you know, get some single malt whiskey drinkers, cognac drinkers, to get them to taste this product, because we believe it's in a higher level. As we say, we are raising the bar of the tequila quality.
And this, you know, this is definitely not a tequila you would mix with anything. It's definitely a sipping tequila. How do you recommend for someone who's never had a sipping tequila to kind of go about it? Is there a certain glassware? Is there a certain temperature? What would I do if I were to try the Tears of Llorona?
Well, I believe that room temperature is great. But if you are a new tequila drinker, maybe a little lower in the temperature, like 2 or 3 degrees below, mm-hmm. that the room temperature. And the right glass, you know, it's Caballitos. It's very Mexican, but I don't like them because you hold them with your hand, mm-hmm. your whole hand, and you transmit the temperature.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, you're sipping the tequila, but is there any good food pairings to have with it?
For this one, my recommendation is always drink it after dinner with your friends, but only with your best friends.
That's when it tastes the best, with good company. And so tell me about the future. Is it going to be released in more areas? Can we try some here in New York, or what can people expect if they want to get their hands on it?
We just released the second load, and New York is included, of course. I love New York. We'll open New Orleans, Florida, and Portland, Oregon. So we'll increase the areas. It was just a taste of what if people like products like this.
Well, it sounds like it went really well for you, because I know the first batch sold out within like a month, I think.
Yes, it was amazing.
Congratulations. All right, well, let's move on to your other line, the T1 line. Maybe you can tell me a little bit about what makes this different from the Tears of Llorona and the different levels, the Blanco, the Añejo, the Reposado, and break it down for me.
Okay. For T1, I created two tequila blancos, one that is called Ultra Fino, and as the name says, is ultra fine. So what I meant to do is to take away only in the distillation, only the ultra-fine elements of flavor. So it's a very thin, it has all the agave flavors, but very thin. I'm thinking on a new tequila drinkers, new people that want to join the tequila in order not to make the tequila face.
The tequila face.
Then we have the Tijuana Blanco Selecto, which is much more a corporate tequila, much more like an old-fashioned Mexican tequila. The whole agave, it's in there, a little higher on alcohol. That's more for a, I don't know, tequila connoisseurs that really want to experiment on those, on the flavors of the agave. Those are great. Neat, ultra fino. You can, you know, you can make your cocktail. I love it on old-fashioned glass, full of ice, Tijuana ultra fino, and a little, you know, a twist of lime or orange. It makes a margarita by itself. I call it the very, very skinny margarita.
The very, very skinny margarita. Okay.
Then we have the Tijuana Reposado, which I call it excepcional. And it has been aged from 6 to 8 months in all the Scotch whiskey barrels. Mm. What I'm looking for in this product is that without losing the freshness of the wood, just add a little velvet of wood on top to polish the peaks of the Blanco. This is amazing. Neat. No lime, no salt, please. But also I drink it in a tall glass with full of ice, 1/3 of Tijuana Reposado Excepcional, and mineral water. Mm-hmm. Very fresh for this summer.
Yes. And tell me a little bit about I like the bottle shape. I try to describe it. It's more like, it almost looks like a teardrop, kind of, you know, upside down. Can you tell me a little bit about the decision for that bottle?
Well, after I left the family company, mm-hmm. I had a lot of time. And, you know, I have been in many bars, tasting a lot of people. And the bottle took me like 6 months to design it because I wanted something really nice and catchy. But as on the other side, that it will be very easy to handle for the bartenders. Mm. The name of the bottle is the Tear of Agave. But, you know, many people call it the genie bottle. And I say, you know, if you drink enough, the genie will come.
Well, it really stands out when I've seen it on shelves or when I've seen it behind the bar. It definitely is eye-catching. And it really, I think it just complements the tequila itself. So remind me again, when did you start producing the T1 line?
I started making it in 2009, and we came to the market in March 2010. New Jersey was the first place to sell our products.
And where does the agave come from for this line?
All the agave comes from the little town of Atotonilco in Jalisco, which is on the highlands. I love those agaves because those agaves will give you a little citrus, earthy flavors on the ending product, and that's what I like.
And then in contrast, the Tears of Llorona, that was your family's reserve. So do those come from different plots, different areas?
It's the same area, much more mature agaves, but I was there looking at this production every hour, so I made a little difference on the distillation to acquire much more agave flavors.
I see. Well, let's just take a break from the tequila for just a second. Since I have you here, I would be remiss not to ask you about some delicious Mexican food. So now that you live in San Antonio, tell me, when you go back to Mexico, what's the first thing you want to eat?
Well, you know, I'm 100% Mexican, so I will always go to have a torta with the lomo, which I love it. I love Mexican food. It's tacos, everything. I have a little problem. As a matter of fact, my wife, she's a chef. She studied in Mexico and then in San Sebastian. And, you know, I have a little problem with food.
Well, you sound like a very lucky man. She sounds like she knows what she's doing in the kitchen.
Yes, you know, and she helps me when I'm, you know, when I'm doing a tasting. Mm-hmm. The last time, let me tell you the menu, because it was Tijuana Ultra Fino with cucumbers, and he came out with lime and salt because it pairs perfectly. Then for the Blanco Selecto, we did the ceviche, because all the Blancos go perfectly with fish, fresh fish, even with sushi. It was great. Then for the Reposado, the Tijuana Reposado, we did the Cochinita PB, which is from Yucatan, Mexico. And for the Añejo, we did a chocolate mousse with Mexican La Abuelita chocolate. So it's one of the things that I love the most about tequila is that you can go your dinner with different tequilas to pair it with perfectly.
Those all sound delicious, the pairings, and just kind of like that flight, like you said, of just every dish has a different pairing. I think you need to come up here and do an event so I can try all of those things.
I'll be in New York in May 11.
Excellent. Well, in the meantime, if people want to find your tequilas or find out more about them, where can they go? Is there a website or a Twitter?
Well, we have a Twitter under T1, another one under Tears of Llorona. We have the Facebook, which is T1 Tequila. And we have the Tears of Llorona Facebook also. And if you gave us some likes, that would be very happy.
Well, I hope everyone out there has a chance to try the tequilas. Definitely look them up. Germán, thank you so much for joining me on Heritage Radio today. I look forward to meeting you soon and drinking some tequila with you.
Yes, and I will. I'm very happy that I'm going to be back in New York.
All right, thank you very much. Take care. That's all for Native this week. Be sure to tune in live right here every Thursday morning at 11 a.m.
The theme song for Native is provided by Evan Hashi.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.